everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's November 2019, and you're listening to episode 149, which is a conversation about the film Joker. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Corey Latta, who holds master's degrees in religion and English and a PhD in literature. He is the author of the forthcoming Serve the Work, Stray Thoughts on Christ and Creativity. Corey has written an online exclusive film review for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called Getting What We Deserve, What Joker Gets Right About Human Depravity. And you can read his review online at our website, completely free, at equip.org. Corey, it's good to have you on.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, Joker has become one of the most profitable comic book movies of all time. It's made more than $950 million at the worldwide box office, and basically, so that's like $1 billion probably after this weekend. And, you know, there have been some other iconic Jokers. People will probably most notably remember the late Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker in the Christopher Nolan trilogy of Batman films. And I believe Heath Ledger won a posthumous Oscar for his portrayal. And this particular Joker in this film, directed by Todd Phillips, is played by actor Joaquin Phoenix. And you can tell in the film he lost a considerable amount of weight for this role. And in fact, I was thinking this is a kind of different film than Todd Phillips has done before. I haven't watched his other raunchy R-rated films, but he's known for more of the raunchy R-rated comedy buddy films that he's done in the past. So this is a completely different kind of film, this superhero kind of film that has a villain kind of origin story. So this is what this is. It's an origin story focused just on the Joker. So why do you think this film Joker, which actually is still in theaters as of November 2019, has been such a hit in the box office?
A few reasons. One is I think the connection to Batman is huge. I mean, he's one of the most popular superheroes between both Marvel and DC, and has just a huge following. I mean, the Batman business is booming. So we have another movie coming out in the next couple of years called The Batman. Chris Nolan, working with Christian Bale, helped kind of make that role iconic. And he's just got a lot of allure. So Joker's attachment to Batman. And you have, I mean, this is not a Batman film, but you do have Batman origins worked into the movie. So I think that's one reason. Another reason is Joker himself as a character is arguably the most mysterious, cryptic, troubled villain in comic book history. I'm just sort of thinking about between Marvel and DC, these sort of iconic, you know, comic book characters and these villains. And Joker is by far the most sinister, the most difficult to pin down in terms of what his motivations are. His origin stories are all over the place. You know, Heath Ledger played with that idea in the Chris Nolan film Dark Knight. And there's just a lot of mystery, sort of sinister mystery around Joker. So he's extremely interesting, very intriguing. And then the third reason I think this movie is just completely blown up is because it deals with topics that other superhero films have not dared to touch, not to the same degree or with the same kind of courage. And these are, you know, salient, pressing issues, mental health, social marginalization, discrepancy between the wealthy and the poor, dysfunctional family systems. I mean, this movie's all over those things. And this is a time in which, you know, historically, in which we are more aware of those issues than ever.
I do want to tell our listeners that this podcast will be spoiler filled. That's the first thing I want to say before we continue. And the other is to give kind of a trigger warning because we are going to be discussing some topics like mental illness, mental health, and violence. And so if those affect you in any kind of way, maybe you want to not listen to this podcast, or if you want to see the film first, if you don't like to hear spoilers, you might want to come back to it. I would say that this film is more gritty. In other words, some of the portrayals in the past, I mean, think of a long time ago when they had on TV the Batman series where they had Eartha Kitt as Catwoman and all that stuff. You know, it was very campy. It was very kind of cartoony. And even more recent portrayals of the Joker, even I'm thinking of Jared Leto in Suicide Squad, it was still a little bit more not campy, but it was just very cartoonish. And I think this particular film, like you mentioned, even with the origins, there is some allusions to the Batman origin himself with the Wayne family, and they are definitely portrayed not in a sanitized way at all in this film. So it is a little bit more grounded to what we could relate to in terms of reality. And I know that you're going to make the claim, and you do in your review, that Joker, this film, gives viewers a unique look at human depravity. So first of all, I'd like to ask you, what is human depravity? And secondly, you know, how does this film do that? Like, in what specific ways does it deal with that topic?
Yeah, you know, theologically, and it's phrased differently, but when we're talking about human depravity or the human condition, sometimes you'll hear that phrase. We're talking about man's sinfulness, his transgressive nature, all of falling short of the glory of God. And I think, at least in my experience and in my studies, and it seems to be the case with kind of across the board, across denominational lines, the idea of depravity remains sort of abstract. Like, you know, what exactly does it mean? Or especially if you buy into a sort of the idea of total depravity, which is the Reformed notion that every single part, and even this definition is debated, but every single part of man's condition, psychological, emotional, relational, spiritual, is tainted, ruined by sin. We're literally dead in our trespasses, have no spiritual life or, you know, moral, they wouldn't say capacity, but conscience, you know, is very limited, it's tainted. So that's generally what we're talking about. It's the fallen nature of man. I think that most definitions are depicted with very broad, almost like crayon strokes. Use the word gritty. I would say that we don't have a granular notion of depravity, or maybe we're afraid of it. So you have these generic terms, sin, transgression, trespass, without a whole lot of work put into defining what exactly that means. And what does it mean when Paul says, you know, be anxious for nothing, but by prayer and supplication, present your request to God? Anxiety or worry, which would be related to a kind of lack of faith, is an element of human depravity. But what do you do when someone has an actual anxiety disorder? You can't just sort of slap that verse on them and expect them to obey it in the same way and same capacity as someone who has no issue with anxiety whatsoever. So what the film does, I think, is it forces us to consider what exactly we mean by depravity. And it's not some generic, you were born in sin, you've told some lies, and maybe you've broken one of the Big Ten, and you need Jesus. And it is a painfully traumatic, when we're talking about human depravity, painfully traumatic, neurological, emotional, sociological reality, and one that often results in violence to self, violence against others, violence against God or the conscience. This film, in pretty brutal fashion, doesn't depict with any broad strokes. These are fine pencil lines being drawn in terms of what depravity might look like. In this case, you know, with the character Arthur Fleck, who is who gets tagged the name Joker.
It's interesting. You know, I read the New York Times film review of Joker, and A.O. Scott is one of my favorite film reviewers, but I would definitely differ from him in his review. He basically posited that this movie did not have a coherent point of view, and it did not have thought-provoking themes. It was just an empty, foggy exercise, is what he said, quote, in secondhand styling and second-rate philosophizing. And I don't really agree with that, because I do think, I agree with you, that there is this narrative that's woven with this theme of how does someone become evil? How does somebody become Joker, just like the average person, not this cartoon character? What are some of the things? And in that is controversy. Is it, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later on about its depiction of mental illness. Is it always that? I mean, how does, you know, does someone wake up one day and they are this very embodiment of evil, whether it's Joker or something real in real life, like that we could point to, like Hitler or Stalin or somebody like that? Is it, you know, do they just wake up as little kids? You know, we think of dictators that we know now, like Kim Jong-un. Was he always, you know, how was that? Was he always like that? I mean, those are some thought-provoking questions. And I do think that this film is definitely having the viewers think about that. So what do you specifically make of this film, Joker's depiction of evil and sin? Because those things come across. I mean, how does Arthur Fleck morph into who the Joker will become?
Yeah, I'd say I agree with you in disagreeing with the that particular review. I think it's a really complex movie. I think it's well written, and I think the arc is subtle but very distinct. So I think it's a really coherent story. It is a chaotic story, but doesn't mean it's not coherent. I'm going to say this in my review. The difference between this film and any other comic book film is you have to suspend no disbelief to watch this movie. You know, you watch Justice League or Avengers Infinity War or Black Panther. You know, when you sit down with your popcorn, I am now suspending disbelief. The worlds are different. They're othered, maybe even, you know, interplanetary or whatever. And the characters are caricatures of some kind of virtue or strength or ability. The Joker is not that. It is, you might as well be in Pittsburgh, or, you know, I live in Memphis. You might as well be in, like, the city is completely relatable. The world is completely relatable. The bullying, the gap between the rich and the poor, the states cutting off funds for mental health programs, mentally ill patients who can't quite get their medication right, codependent borderline personalities in relationship with their disassociated delusional mothers. I mean, this is everyday life stuff. And I think that's the door Joker goes through to show us what sin and evil is. It is a condition, right? The sin nature is a condition. But it's a condition that plays itself out, not vaguely or abstractly. It plays itself out in broken relationships. It plays itself out in psychopathy or sociopathy. It plays itself out in systems that exploit those with mental illness. And then it plays out oftentimes with those who have mental illness retaliating against that very system that they feel oppressed and marginalized by. So, it's biblical in this sense. You go back and read an Old Testament narrative. You see these sociological and communal transgressions between these groups or individuals, and you realize, oh, sin against another or brokenness with another is what we're talking about. We're talking about the sin nature or depravity. And this film is just chock full of those kinds of depictions. If anything, it's a much more robust, this movie offers a much more robust view of depravity, because it touches upon every aspect of the human condition. If you read a book like Bezel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score, maybe the definitive work on trauma, and how trauma affects the body, and you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, you know, Joaquin Phoenix is losing a ton of weight, and he looks totally emaciated in this film. And he's got this kind of bent frame. You can see his spine. One of the symptoms of his many psychological disorders is he has uncontrollable laughter when he feels the opposite. Well, he expresses it when he, in sort of contradictory occasions. So if he feels sad or fearful, he starts laughing. That's his condition. And van der Kolk in The Body Keeps the Score makes this argument that trauma and pain and hurt, those things are literally embodied, and we carry in our physical bodies the signs of that trauma. I mean, if that's not a commentary or a serious commentary on what sin does to the human self, then I don't know what is. And I can't think of a movie that does a better job of very viscerally showing that than Joker. So it just gives us a really painful but extremely accurate view of sort of the slums and gutters in the human self in terms of what depravity does to, you know, the mind, the heart, the soul.
I would also say something that I think the film was very effective at doing is that one thing art, good art, can do, and I know there's a lot of, speaking of Marvel and DC and those kinds of films, there's right now, November 2019, there's a lot of debate about those kinds of movies as films because of a comment that director Martin Scorsese made. That's a whole different podcast probably about how these films are not art. But I would argue in the case of this film, one thing that good art does is it helps you walk in the shoes of a protagonist or a character to see what caused them to do something they do, or maybe even feel or experience something that they are going through, whether it's a book or, you know, you're reading a book or you're watching a TV series or you're watching a film. And I think that's what this does. It actually, especially if you are somebody that doesn't deal with directly with people who struggle with mental illness or have, you know, anybody that has those kinds of conditions, it's probably outside of your purview. And I think this film really helps you see, well, why are even government programs important to help people? Because he goes in for, you know, some counseling in that kind of a setting. So what else would you say that we can learn about the human condition in this film?
Yeah, a few things. One is I would just reiterate what I said about we often, Christians, over-spiritualize these things like depravity. If you want to see what the Bible talks about in terms of being, you know, fallen or all being astray, things like that, if you want to sort of see that played out, go to a psych ward, go to a hospital. I mean, the fall is tangibly, visibly, physically real. So to be able to see in the character of Arthur Fleck, the trauma, I mean, he's the victim of childhood abuse, unspeakable childhood abuse, sexual, physical, psychological, emotional, and to see him carry that, I mean, that is the fallen man. That's sort of the old self that we believe, you know, Christ wants to redeem. So I would say that we need a much more visceral, granular depiction of depravity. And the film can teach us that, I think. Another thing is there is a price to pay, a psychic and social price to pay for our actions, for our sins, for the sin nature, for depravity. It explodes. It comes out sideways. The story of Arthur is this repressed, oppressed, very disturbed, lonely guy, troubled, who finally reaches a kind of, you know, tipping point because of other people's sinfulness, you know, other people's abuse and bullying and ridicule and all that. And it creates this reaction that reverberates all the way to the end of the film and creates this iconic character in the reverberation. But it's a violent reaction. It's a phenomenal commentary on what sin does. It is not isolated. It doesn't just stay with the person. It comes out sideways in really bloody ways. So I think the film does a good job of teaching us that. And also, I think there's a, you mentioned sort of the artfulness of the film. It has a kind of an Old Testament narrative feel to it to me. And I think we Christians, this is a whole other conversation, but it's something to think about, need to understand our doctrine oftentimes in the form of narrative. We've become, I think, almost entirely propositional and didactic and doctrinal in these kind of platitude ways. But, you know, so much of what we're taught about the character of God and the nature of man comes in the form of narrative. So we need, I'll mention in the review, films like There Will Be Blood or A Clockwork Orange or American Psycho in terms of the things we say and claim as Christians about the nature of man. These things are real, and you want to see the consequence, sort of the opera of depravity play out, put it in a narrative. I think, again, against that New York Times review, I think this is a really excellent narrative. So there's a kind of artfulness to it that I think we Christians can learn something from. It just has a much more powerful effect being presented. You know, if I just were to say, hey, sin leads to mental illness. Okay, that's not nearly as powerful as seeing something like this mentally ill man descend into his own kind of personal hell, you know. So I think we can learn from that as well.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. Corey Latta, and he has written an online exclusive film review of the film Joker, and it's called Getting What We Deserve, What Joker Gets Right About Human Depravity and you can read this review online for free at our website, equip.org. I'd also like to invite you to subscribe to the journal. A subscription is $33.50, and to subscribe, go to our website, equip.org. In addition, if a subscription is not in your budget this month, please help us out by rating and reviewing this podcast. And when you rate and review our podcast, it helps other people find our content. You could, for example, go wherever you get your podcasts or go to Apple Podcasts and give us a rating and a written review, and that would really help us out a lot. Another way that you can help us if your budget is limited is to give us a tip for our content to help keep our content, all the free online exclusive articles like this film review and all of our podcasts, completely free through your support. And when you go to our website, if you go to magazine, scroll down to Postmodern Realities Podcast, you'll find a landing page for this episode. Click on that and you will see a link where you could give us a tip. It might be $3, $5, $10. Maybe that's the cost of abstaining from a week of your favorite coffee drink, or maybe skipping a lunch out or something like that, by giving us a small tip to help keep this podcast and all of our content free. And we thank you for your support, because we would like to continue to bring you all of this great content about apologetics, about the Christian faith, about the Christian life through the Postmodern Realities Podcast. I'd like to pivot right now and talk, as I mentioned earlier in this episode, about the controversy around the Joker's depiction of mental illness. I know that when it first released in Venice, it won awards there at the Venice Film Festival. And yet there are a lot of people in Hollywood. I read a piece in the Hollywood Trades where a lot of people found it to be extremely dark, that they shouldn't have used mental illness as part of the narrative. And some people that thought the movie was amazing, but again, was disturbed by how dark it was. And some people saying that they were going to avoid it because of the gun violence and the, you know, bullying, and especially the mental illness. They thought it maybe should not have used that as a tipping point of his motivations for what he did. So it's interesting. You mentioned A Clockwork Orange. Now, some people in Hollywood said, you know, back in the day in the 1970s, I think that came out in 1971, people thought it was an amazing film. But all these years later, to call that, you know, amazing for the Joker, I don't know if people have the same reaction to it because of its subject matter. So on that point, what other concerns does the Joker raise? And is this controversy warranted? I mean, again, people in Hollywood were quoted as saying this is a depressing film. It's odd. It's too dark for me. So what do you think of the controversy around, especially the issue of mental illness and gun violence as depicted in the film?
Yeah, I'll first say something about it being dark and all that. I'm sort of like, well, don't see the movie. I mean, not all art is meant to be, I don't know what people are looking for, but it's not meant to be uplifting. Christians are particularly bad about this, where we've mistaken Christian for encouraging. And I'm like, have you read your Old Testament? I mean, it is brutal. There are stories in the text that we call the inspired word of God that are absolutely, I mean, they would have to be censored. That I don't know that they would make an R rating if they were depicted accurately. Absolutely horrendous. And they're there in the text because the biblical author is not trying to be prescriptive. He's trying to be descriptive. This is reality. So the idea that this is too dark, I'm like, I don't know what world you live in. Wake up. You don't have to see a dark movie if you don't want to, but the world in which you live is dark. And it's the role of art to imitate and expand upon life. And life is tragic. So I have zero problems with the film being dark. The idea of mental illness and gun violence, again, those things aren't being exploited. They're being depicted. That would be about like saying, hey, you shouldn't watch The Godfather because it promotes a life in the mafia. Like it's going to, you know, create this sort of appeal to go join one of the five families or something. I don't think those topics, mental illness, gun violence, domestic violence, I don't think those things are being exploited. They're being depicted, and they're not being depicted in any kind of invitational way. If a viewer sees, you know, Joker and thinks, oh, I've got a borderline personality and I should rail against my social order and violence. I don't think that's a responsibility of the filmmaker. I think that's the responsibility of the individual viewer. If we go down that road of censoring and avoiding topics because they might elicit some kind of, you know, negative response, I don't know where it ends. Again, we're going to have to censor our Bibles. Half of great literature, like the entire canon, you know, Cormac McCarthy or something like that, would be eliminated. So I also think that we have to have some kind of appreciation, might not be the right word, that may be too sensitive for people, but some kind of capacity to stomach things like mental illness and gun violence. Again, because this is the world in which we live. For the Christian, I can almost excuse the non-Christian more quickly than I could the Christian. The non-Christian has no mandate to do anything in the world, right? There's no faith standard or anything that says, hey, try to work these social orders and systems into something that might be used by God or might help people, or, you know, something redeemable. But the Christian has that mandate. And I don't know how you could pretend to enter into a world that's sanitized. It's not. If the Christian's going to engage the world, he or she needs to understand the unsanitary nature of it. And I think, again, this film becomes a kind of mirror to the world in which we live. And that world, we're told, is a kind of field in which we are to work. And the work is hard and it's dirty. So I don't quite understand the, you know, protest against depicting something that's there. I would have more of an issue, and I think art doesn't have to be realistic at all. It can be completely fantastic and still, I mean, I think Lord of the Rings shows us more truths about the quote-unquote real world than most realist art. But art doesn't have to be realist or fantastic to show us something of the world. Realist art, fantastic art, if they are an intent, and I think this is the intent of Joker, if they are an intent trying to show us something about the world in which we live, something about ourselves, I think there's value there, particularly for the Christian. So it is hard to watch. I mean, but here's the thing. Todd Phillips did not try to make a film that was going to be easy to watch. I mean, that's not an accident. So people who are sort of protesting the darkness or the disturbing nature of the film, like, that is the point. The point of the nature is to disturb. And it is disturbing. It does an excellent job at achieving its goal. But again, it's because life is disturbing. Mental illness is disturbing. Domestic, sexual, and psychological abuse is disturbing, and it's real. I mean, the mental health field is projected to grow by about 20% over the next 10 years because we've never had such a pandemic of mental illness as we do now. So I don't think we need less films depicting the horrific nature of mental illness. We need more.
I think one thing that was criticized about this film in the New York Times review is that there's really no story here. And actually, I felt most of the times when you watch a film, you know, when they're trying to set up some kind of film that has redemptive value, you get some backstory about maybe the villain or the person that's quote unquote the bad guy or whatever, but there's not very much exposition in it. And in this film, he's really showing you. He's not telling you why this happened to Arthur Fleck, how he became Joker, but he just shows you everything that weighed down on him in his life, which is basically everything since he was born. He's just been rejected, abused, neglected. And even I find it interesting in his work situation, they kind of weave in the whole, you know, clown makeup thing because he works as a clown. And, you know, they're used for, you know, children's times at hospitals or, you know, parties or, you know, going out of business sales or just different things like that. People who work in that. And that particular workplace is full of a hodgepodge of odd type of people, which he shows. And even there, he's portrayed as an outsider who's not liked and so on. So it is really interesting as it depicts, first of all, he struggles with mental illness, and then it's almost like stacked up against him everywhere he goes because he has these certain medical conditions. People already treat him so badly, whether it's somebody just interacting with him, a stranger on the bus, or, you know, his coworkers or people that see him on the subway, which kind of is one of the tipping points that starts him down violence. That's probably the subway scene is a scene in which people had many objections to because of the gun violence there as a response to bullying. So given all of this, what, for the viewer, are there takeaways that we can think about for mental illness? Is there anything that might help viewers not just understand the nature and severity of mental illness, but also have compassion for those who struggle with mental illness or those people who are trying to reach out to people with mental illness?
Yeah. Before I get to that, I'll say the idea that, you know, the story, it's actually a very conventional story. I mean, any literary minded folks out there know there's essentially exposition, rising action, climax, falling action, and a kind of conclusion or resolution. And the story, Joker, has all that. It's just that the resolution is dark. And it also has, as a climax, a really important point. You made the comment that, you know, there's a lot of showing and not telling. I think that's true. But there is explanation. We are given a backstory. One of the climax of the film is him finding out the truth about his mother. And that, because he's so disassociated, he can't remember essentially anything about his childhood. He doesn't remember the fact, as far as we can tell, until he reads the file about his mother's stay in Arkham Asylum, that, you know, I mean, she essentially chained him to a radiator and had men abuse him. That's the backstory and the climax. That's a point of revelation. We discover that with Arthur, and that becomes the explanation. He's not just a random guy born with mental illness. This is what I'm saying about the violent communal nature of sin. He was abused into being a monster. He wasn't just born one. And I would say that's the first thing that this film teaches us, that, you know, there are genetic, neurological, physiological elements at play, certainly, in cases of people with mental illness. But many, 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 many times, disorders come from trauma, which are caused by other people. Mental illness doesn't happen in a vacuum. And I would say that's the first takeaway. This film is a film about abuse. Now, the way in which he responds to abuse is not okay. And again, it's not being prescribed, it's being described. But he was abused into a place of trauma. There are consequences for our actions. I mean, like, to abuse or to bully, we can't imagine those things won't result in something. And the film shows us that they can in pretty horrendous ways. Another takeaway I would say is there is a responsibility as a society to those who have illnesses, both physical and mental. I mean, this is sort of straight gospel 101, right? The least of these. We find Arthur Fleck at the beginning of the movie cut off from his medication, cut off from help. His social worker is completely obtuse. She doesn't have a, I mean, he comes in there and says, look, you ask me the same things time after time, and you don't listen to me. No one listens to me. So there's a real call for advocacy and hearing people that I think we're likely to miss in watching the film. But the film's a kind of cry for us to pay attention to those around us who are struggling, because they're not going to be okay on their own. And then I think maybe a third thing I kind of take away is that, again, theologically, depravity is a granular, violent, embodied reality. It is not some kind of, you know, abstract, vague Sunday school notion of disappointing God and there being a gap between he and I. And it's more. It's much more. And it plays itself out in really dysfunctional ways.
This film, Joker, is very unconventional comic book film. I think even an unconventional villain origins film, if you think of last year's Venom that came out, which is part of the Marvel Universe. And how is Joker important to this particular, you know, superhero film genre, whether it's the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe? I mean, I think one thing that you were talking about, you know, where we say, okay, we can suspend belief in these things because there's, you know, major CGI, especially when you watch, you know, Infinity Wars or something like that, or any of the Marvel films where there's a lot of superpower stuff. This seems like there's none of that there. He is really dealing with real life struggles, real life mental illness. So there's not that same type that we normally see. But what does it add to this particular genre that you think would be helpful for the genre So it's not just, again, another CGI movie where there's going to be planets exploding or the hero dying and coming back multiple times and that kind of thing.
Yeah, realism is what I think it brings. I mean, if this weren't Joker and it weren't tied to the Wayne family, and you see, you know, young Bruce in the film and all that, who becomes Batman, it would just be a movie about someone with a traumatic past and mental illness that you wouldn't even know. I mean, it's, as you were talking, I was thinking about like the movie Manchester by the Sea, like Casey Affleck, or again, something like There Will Be Blood, Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, it would be one of those films. So it brings, I mean, they're just realistic depictions of some kind of tragic, you know, occurrence or story, downfall of someone. And that's all this film is. It just happens to be about a character iconically and historically known as Joker. So I think it brings an element of realism. And one reason that Chris Nolan's trilogy was so popular was it showed us a Batman who could be believed, as opposed to the more outlandish depictions with Kilmer or Clooney or Michael Keaton. I'm really fond of them. That was my Batman growing up, Michael Keaton. But even that film had a kind of outlandish, cartoonish element to it. Chris Nolan took us in the direction of reality, and this film just completely arrived at the destination of reality. It's utterly real. And I think you'll start seeing, actually, if this were not a commercial success, it wouldn't move the needle. But because this film has been so profitable, I think you're going to start seeing a spike in the maturity of these films. DC has always been a shade darker than Marvel in its depictions. I mean, Marvel has, you know, Deadpool is kind of a raunchy graphic character in the movies, but we don't have any kind of counterpart to this where you really just have a unrelentingly visceral, violent depiction of a character or villain. But I think we're going to start seeing more of that. I mean, these production studios are out to make money, obviously, and it's undeniable the impact Joker's had financially. So I think we'll see more. I don't know that we'll see Joaquin Phoenix reprise the role. I think that's up in the air right now, and there's a lot of chatter. But we will see a more realistic, darker shift in superhero films.
So what about for the Christian apologist? You know, we've been talking about this film. I mean, what are some of the theological angles that viewers of this film could take to better appreciate the Joker or have a film discussion with another person who is not a Christian, who is a superhero fan?
Right. The first thing I'd say is I recall the point I've made about the nature of man, depravity, and sin. I mean, it's the mission of the apologist to make the things of God and the gospel known to people who need it. But there has to be a recognition of need first. So part of the apologist's agenda has to be to make aware what all's broken, what all's in need. And I mean, you know, this film, again, on a social, communal, relational, personal, even neurological level, shows it, that we are in need. And the apologist can't sanitize that, can't clean it up. I know many apologists try to, you know, almost puritanically, but this is what we're dealing with. So I think there's got to be recognition of that. And then also, you know, I think about C.S. Lewis's presentation of Logos and Poema. He says that any work of literature, art, is made up of two things. Logos, the thing that's said, and Poema is how it's said. So the thing that's said, we've talked about, you know, violence, mental illness, trauma, crime, all this stuff. But the way it's said, again, is very artfully done here. And C.S. Lewis knew this. That's why he wrote fiction. The Chronicles of Narnia is an example of this. That you can get across in artful form Christian truths. And it is a Christian truth that we are fallen and all gone astray. So to tell that tale in the form of a tale is something I think Christians need to pay more attention to. I wrote an article for the Christian Research Journal, I think maybe 2 years ago, on this, that we need to return to form. Dorothy Sayers knew this. C.S. Lewis knew this. Great writers like Flannery O'Connor knew this, that truth divorced from presentation is going to fall flat. I mean, we are a people of art. So apologists can, I think, take a page from the book of storytelling. It's a dark story. But again, many of the texts that we ourselves ascribe to are fairly dark. And it's the fact that they're in story form that makes them so dark. And that's how the power of the messages of these stories are conveyed. So I think that's worth mentioning. And then also, you know, we're just meant to have our fingers on the pulse of culture. And this is what's happening. I mean, this movie's made $1 billion. Hard to be relevant and know what's going on in your world if you're ignorant of that. I mean, obviously, this film is scratching some itch. So if we want to engage the world, we need to know what that itch is.
Well, two things finally. First of all, can Christians learn anything from a movie as dark as The Joker? Because I think some Christians would say, first of all, this is R-rated. And I do want to tell people it is R-rated mainly for language and violence. There is a very brief, I mean, seconds long, non-sexualized nudity. So there's like no sexuality and nudity in it. But, you know, a lot of people would be like, why would I even as a Christian want to know anything about a movie this dark? And then also, secondly, what about for parents? Obviously not for younger kids, but what if you have teenagers, older teenagers, 16, 17, that are big, you know, kind of nerd, superhero fans? Would you recommend them going to this film with their parents? It is R, so you're going to have to go with, you know, somebody over 18. But, you know, what would you even recommend for, you know, Christian teens? I mean, what is the benefit? What kind of discussions can parents have with their kids?
Yeah, the first bit there about should Christians see it because it's dark, or do you endure? Again, there's a part of me that just wants to be reactive about that. I'm like, you know, Abraham tried to essentially prostitute his wife out to save his own skin. You've got the story of David, well known, right? Who just out of sheer power and lust seduces a woman, maybe even forces himself on her, and then kills her husband to cover it up. We've got Solomon, the wisest man who's ever lived, who has roughly 1,000 women. And these aren't like, you know, Facebook friends. I mean, these are women he's sexually active with. The Israelites are told to annihilate the Canaanites. Women, children. You know, there's kind of this weird splitting off that Christians have. I'm like, I want to ask, are you not familiar with your Bibles? I mean, that's darker than anything that's in Joker, or as dark. And it's there because that's the nature of man. That's the nature of the world. So it's just sort of like, you know, putting your head in the sand to not pay attention to the very nature they share. I mean, Arthur Fleck is not some other character. He's a reflection of what's in me and you, if traumatized and taken down that road. That's what the Old Testament character is meant to do as well. So I really don't understand the old objection to it being dark. I'm like, well, you need to go ahead and start your Bible at Matthew, if that's the case. And, you know, if you have a family member or friend who's got mental illness, go ahead and shut them out too, because the reality of the world is going to, you know, reach itself into your life as it's supposed to all the time. And then for parents, you know, I can't obviously make the decision that, you know, should your kid see it, should not, but it certainly will produce conversation. If you want to have a conversation with your kid about the nature of mental illness, about violence in society, again, reality, we can't ignore them. This film is an excellent sort of test case in what and how those things intersect. And, you know, comic book culture has never been larger. More than likely, especially among young boys and teenage boys, more than likely, a parent's got a child who's into comic book culture and loves Batman and Joker and things like that. They're interested. This film didn't produce interest. It just met interest. The interest is already there. So if a parent wants to actually, because a parent's not going to be able to control those interests. You're not going to tell your 16-year-old kid, hey, just stop liking Joker. But if a parent wants to meet their teenager where they are and engage with them and try to learn something about why the teenager has an interest in Batman and Joker and these archetypal characters, man, I mean, this movie is a phenomenal conversation piece. So I think it's an invitation to have conversation about real stuff.
Well, now on a lighter note, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Corey. So Corey, it's officially fall now. It's almost Thanksgiving. Pumpkin spice latte, yes or pass?
I love pumpkin everything, but I'm not a fan of the pumpkin spice latte.
Would you rather wash dishes or do laundry?
Oh man, neither. Laundry for sure, but neither.
And it's about to be Thanksgiving. So what are three things that you are thankful for in 2019?
My kids, writing, thankful for that. And, thankful for growth. personal growth, which is often difficult and hard and hurts, but thankful for it.
Well, thanks, Corey, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Melanie.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Corey Latta, and he has written an online exclusive film review for the Christian Research Journal. It's about the film Joker, and it's called Getting What We Deserve, What Joker Gets Right About Human Depravity. You can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast.